Possession number 25935, John Hall, Rail 11.
Back from these Russian convoys, where would you go? What would you do?
Well, we'd either go into Reykjavik in Iceland, or we'd go back to Scapa.
Now, what would you do at Reykjavik? Tell me
Now,
about that first.
Reykjavik, we're probably somewhat, we were allowed ashore there at Reykjavik. We could go to the pictures or the shops. It was a sort of a just a run ashore. The bars, whatever, playing football again somewhere. But most of the time was spent, as you can imagine, we'd had, if it was dirty weather and we were full of, the ship was just filthy, so most of the time would be spent cleaning ship. Every porthole would be open, every hatch would be open, and we'd clean the ship right through because we were now blooming filthy, and we were filthy. So it would be, we'd probably never washed for the last 2 weeks, because we couldn't take our clothes off to do it anyway. And the water was probably rationed. We couldn't really use it very much. So we'd sort of clean ourselves and clean our kit as much as we could, lay our bedding out. It was air bedding time on the forecastle if it was nice weather. And the mattresses and that we slept on, and the blankets we used to hang out. So mainly it was cleaning ship, really, when we went in.
And that was when you went to Scapa.
And when we went to Scapa, we'd probably go, if about every, perhaps every 3 or 4 trips, we would go down to Rosyth for what they call a boiler clean.
Now tell me about that. What's happened?
Well, boiler clean would just be cleaning out the boilers. It'd probably take about 5 days, but it meant that we could all go ashore in Rosyth and have a whale of a time if we would. I mean, everybody could have a run ashore now, in a place where which was habitable, where there were people that we knew,
So what would
and
you
we
do?
had a Rosyth.
Or was it just a matter of getting drunk?
It was a matter of getting drunk. I remember that it was rationing time, and I remember there that if you took a a few onions or a pound of butter. You were welcomed anywhere, couldn't do anything practically at that stage. You know, whatever we could take ashore, we'd have a free run ashore on that, being sailors.
Now, what's next then? So you're doing these.
Well, coming to, I'm now coming up to my 21st birthday, which is in April 1943.
And what happened then?
I'm now 20. I'm made an able seaman.
That, 'cause you mentioned that before, but
Yes,
that you got the wrong
I was
time
a bit
then.
early. I was a bit before my time. I was still an ordinary seaman then, so I've now know that I'm made an able seaman. I'm 20 years old, and I can draw me tot.
Now tell me
The
about the
tot,
rum ration.
the rum ration we had on destroyers was what they called two in one. You'd have one tot of rum added with two tots of water added.
And how was it issued?
That was issued by a leading hand of the mess would go to the usually to somewhere where if it was at sea, it'd be in a mess deck somewhere. If it was in harbour, it'd probably be on the upper deck somewhere, and an officer would be there with the big rum barrel, and he'd have his measure, and he would take a fanny, a small fanny to collect your rum ration. And he would dish it out to how many people were in each mess that drew their tot. It was either drawing your tot or you were allowed threepence a day if you
Now,
didn't, if
which
you were
did you go for?
temperance. I went for me tot.
Now, tell us about gulpers and sippers if you had them.
Well, gulpers, sippers were, I'm sure the officers would be very pleased with this. They were things we it worked out that you could get certain things done for a certain amount of tot. If it was sippers, it was small things.
Such as.
Perhaps some going for doing somebody's duty. It'll probably be sippers for a week. You know, I wanted to go ashore tonight, and I was on duty, so I'd get somebody to do it, and it would cost me perhaps a Sippers or a Golpers, whatever he wanted to do, or whatever it was. If it was, if he went after a temperance man, he probably wouldn't get any. But it was mostly that was a tot. If you wanted something big done, like anything made from either the carpenter or the blacksmith or whatever, anything big would be bottoms up, which would be, you know, you'd have the full tot.
Now,
whatever the job you wanted, I used to give my tobacco away, and I'd probably get sippers for it. I didn't want anything more. But if you weren't at the mess of that person you were getting sippers off, if you weren't there when he's ready to drink his tot like this, he'd be waiting for you to come. And if you weren't there, I'm afraid you were too late. So you didn't get it.
Now, would you ever get enough to get drunk, say, on your 21st birthday?
I was. On my 21st birthday, which I was... which is in 91, what was it, 21st birthday? On a Russian convoy going to Russia.
This is your 21st birthday?
Yeah, the 21st. I'm 21. There was no getting away from it. I started in the chief's mess and worked my way back to my own mess. And I must have gone to every mess I must have had everybody in the ship was giving me sippers. I couldn't drink more than the sippers. And it must have, I mean, I can't remember much after that. I know they stowed me away somewhere. And I never went on watch that day. God knows what happened. If the ship had gone then, I don't know. But I was thoroughly drunk, I'm afraid, on a Russian convoy.
Did you enjoy your rum? Normally, I mean.
I look forward to it, especially as I started, as I said, on the Russian convoys. It was something we look forward to.
And what was so good about was, it?
I don't know. It sort of made... I don't know. There was at 11 o'clock when Up Spirits was piped. There was a sort of a surge of enthusiasm about the whole ship. So for some reason, everybody was looking forward to the tot. Was the main thing of the day, I think. It sort of warmed you up a bit, I suppose, and it was something to look forward to on a mundane routine. It was something out of the ordinary. You were going to get your tot of rum, and we also used to get. Sometimes the skipper would let us have a tot of rum after we'd sort of chipped the bin up on the forecastle or whatever, doing a lot of hard work getting the ice off the ship. He'd say, "All right, well, we have another tot, keep us warm."
Now let's go to the. We've jumped just ahead.
Yes, a bit.
But let's go to the sink of the Sharnhorst. That was
right.
Boxing Day, 1903.
Now then, Christmas on just before Christmas Day. We left. We'd already been on a convoy up to Russia, and we were leaving with an empty convoy now coming home. This was just before Christmas. We'd got to Bear Island, and we'd just passed Bear Island, probably getting to a safer place now. I suppose that the danger had almost. It was dark. It was rough. It was snow. There were blizzards and everything else. The usual north. Gales and things that were blowing down from the ice. We were coming home. We'd passed the inward convoy. We didn't see it. It was probably 50, 60 miles away from us going into Russia. We got a signal on Christmas morning for the four fleet destroyers. That was the Manchester...
No, Maxus.
Sorry, why do I keep saying Manchester? I think I've got a something with the Manchester. I think I don't know why, because I come from there, I suppose. There was the Matchless, the Musketeer, Opportune, and Savage. I think were the four fleet destroyers. We left. We were recalled from the convoy to go back to pick up the inward bend. The Russian convoy going in. When we got there, towards the later on Christmas Day, we eventually joined the cruiser squadron, which was, I think, Belfast and I can't remember the ships they were on and the other destroyers, but they had been in contact with the Sharnhorst. The Sharnhorst was now sort of lurking around the convoy coming home. We started, we were, they found her once and fired on her. They fired a few rounds. She disappeared into the gloom. She did have five destroyers with her when she left, but they'd got lost somewhere in the storms and things, so Shanus was actually on her own. She'd got north of the convoy, somehow got round, and the cruiser squadron lost her. They lost her for quite a few hours and didn't know where she'd gone. They didn't know where she'd gone, whether she'd gone back or... But Admiral Burnett on the cruiser squadron, I suppose this is why they're made admirals, I don't know, but he sort of had the idea that he would get between wherever he thought she was and the convoy. And that's where he met that she came into view again. So we fired on her. I think she was hit a couple of times.
We
well, the whole fleet. I mean, we fired a few rounds. Whether we did anything to her, I mean, we only had 4-inch anyway. But the whole thing sort of fired star shell. If we couldn't fire anything else, we lit her up with star shell. That lasted for a couple of hours, I suppose. That sort of action. But she turned away and headed for home. I think she'd had enough. Now she was way up in the north. So there was quite a distance to go to get back to her North Cape. So we shattered her. The destroyers came on either side of her with her sort of away in the distance a bit. And every now and then we'd sort of increase speed to try and torpedo her, to get a torpedo attack into her. Torpedoes were fired, but I don't think any hit. So the torpedoes floating around the ocean somewhere. We couldn't see each other, I'm afraid. It was rough. It was dark. I heard that the King George, the KG-5, and the Jamaica, and their escorts were coming up from the south, about 200 miles away. About then, coming up from Scapa Flow way, coming in, and they were going to cut her off or try to cut her off before she got back to the North Cape. Boxing Day, we were still chasing her, and then the first thing I can remember is the first inclination I had of the other fleet being there was when the King George V opened fire, and there was
what could you see?
Nothing, only tracer. You know, the shells were coming over, and you just sort of automatically duck as they came over. We were still trying to close our destroyer, the division of destroyers I was in. That was four destroyers, two on either side. We're still trying to get in for a torpedo attack.
But you failed? Or...
Well, the others fired a torpedo, but I can remember going in, and we got to about 1,000 yards of the Scharnhorst. And as I said, it was rough. There was a following sea. There were blizzards blowing like blazes all over the place. It was dark, although there was star shell still being fired. We went in for a torpedo attack. We trained our torpedoes onto the starboard side, so she would fire to starboard. We come down on the Shannos port side. I think the musketeer was also not far in company, and I remember she came very close to us trying to do her run, just a shadow in the mist.
Were you under fire, or had she not seen him? The show not.
She was firing, but I don't think she'd seen us. I don't think she was trying to get away from us. I don't think it was much fire from her then at that stage. So we went in for a torpedo attack. We got into about 1,000 yards, and at that time there was a hell of a wave came. Over the waist, round the onto the torpedo and torpedo tubes, and they were put out of action. So we didn't. We failed to fire. Just after that, we heard that the Shanos was sunk. For a long time,
by the KG-5.
I think the Jamaica was the last one to put a torpedo into her. But it was a lot of confusion. There was an awful lot of confusion because nobody was sure at that stage whether she had actually been sunk. She just sort of disappeared off the radar screens, I think.
Now, you were on the pom poms.
I was still closed up at pom poms, yes. But I hadn't fired anything. I mean, there was nothing for us to fire at. The 4-inch were the only things that were doing any firing. So there was no aircraft, or there were no submarines as far as we knew about at that time, no U-boats. Anyway, eventually we knew that the Sharnost had been sunk. And I think there were two destroyers. The fleet left the scene. We're heading back to Murmansk. The KG-5 and all and whatever fleet was with her, and they left the Matchless and one other destroyer. I think that I'm not sure whether it was one of the S destroyers, and I'm not sure which one it was. But we were left to find if there were any survivors.
And what do you remember of that?
I remember them switching on a searchlight and having a quick look round, and there were a lot of flotsam and bits and pieces in the water. It was rough as well, as I said. It was damn cold, but there were survivors.
How did you get them aboard in that way?
We put scrambling nets over the side. And went alongside as many as we could, and some of our sailors sort of went down the side of the shell and grabbed hold of them and sort of dragged them up, those that couldn't do it. We only actually picked up 32. There were 32 survivors. We actually picked up 6. The other destroyer picked up the remainder. Now,
what's
as far...
with you?
Very bad state, because they were probably near death, and they were all very young. Younger than me, I think, most of them. And there wasn't, eventually, we knew that there wasn't an officer amongst them. They were only seamen.
How were they treated?
We treated them very well, actually. We took them down below, we warmed them, we gave them a tot of rum, and we did whatever we could for them. Because they were really cold and frightened. I think for most of them, they're the first time they'd been to sea. Because they never went out very often to do anything. I think they were just scared, more scared than probably we were. But there were a few more that we probably could have picked up. But at that stage, we were ordered to leave the scene and follow King George V back, because they were frightened of U-boats coming down at that time. So we went back to Murmansk. We unloaded, the prisoners were taken off and put on another ship, a bigger ship somewhere, probably to be interrogated anyway, or to be questioned. And we came back to Scapa.
And that was the end of it?
And that was the end of that one. I had a few more convoys after that.
Similar to the ones we discussed.
Similar to the ones there, but they were always
that was
much of a muchness, yes.
Through 1944, you were a Russian convoy.
Yes, right up to 1945, February 45. When I left the Manchester.
Had you been made leading seaman before?
I'm coming to that now. After the I got made leading seaman in I was just over 21. I just picked up, as I said, made AEB. I think it was about a year later. When was I made leading seaman? It was one of the convoys. I came back. I was about 20. Getting off 22, I think, when I got made leading seaman.
So 45.
Just before 45, probably the end of 1944.
And what difference did that make? What were you?
Well, at end of 1944, I was in Scapa. I think the, my first lieutenant had asked me, or they'd all said, you know, was I going to take the leading seaman's rate? And I sort of said yes, I'd give it a go. We had to we came into Scapa, and I think I did it aboard, I think it was HMS Tyne,
Did you have to
which was the
study?
supply ship. Oh yes, I studied quite a bit before then. I had the seamanship man, the volume one seamanship manual for a long time, most of the time on Russia, on the on coming home from on the Russian convoy when I decided to go in for a leading seaman. I had all the usual exams on board the Tyne. You had to do anchors and cables, and there was a lot of sailing on a whaler, a pulling. I had to have power command, which was a bit of rifle drill and a bit of squad drill. Then there was a lot of class work stuff as well, but anyway, I passed for leading seaman.
And what difference did
Now
that
that
make?
difference made that I was now I could now take charge of things. I was now a leading seaman, temporary leading seaman to start with, for about 3 months or so. I remained on the matchless in that time, but
Still on the gun, still.
I was still, well, I got a bit more promotion there. I was still a leading seaman, and I could now coxswain a boat as well. When we came in harbour, I could coxswain the ship's motorboat, so I could take that hither and yon with wherever we were going, alongside the other big ships if the captain wanted to go aboard, take Liberty men ashore, go and pick them up. I remember one time, we were in Scapa, and it was raining like blazes and a bit rough. I went in I took the motor cutter into Lyneness, to the fleet canteen, and I had the whaler towing behind me because of the amount of sailors there was ashore. And I got this boat full of sailors, drunken sailors. I towed them back aboard to go alongside, and they were all singing and shouting and creating merry hell. But I wasn't allowed to go. The officer of the watch waved me off and wouldn't let me come alongside. And I kept having to go round and round till these devils kept quiet. I was shouting and screaming at them, using my power of command to no avail, I'm afraid. But they did quieten up a bit, and then I got them aboard. But that was a sort of experience of how to take charge, or trying to take charge of drunken sailors, I think. But having passed for a leading seaman, I knew that I wasn't going to be very long now before I had to left, because I was now I had no requirement aboard. They were now one leading seaman too many and one able seaman too short, if you will.
So when
So
did you
now it's
leave?
I left in February 1945 and went back to barracks.
And how did you feel on leaving ship?
As I said, I've been on these ships a long time. I'd been on there for 2.5 years nearly. I was 2.5 years on the Manchester, and I didn't like it when I left there. But at least on the Manchester, when I left a lot of friends I'd known for quite a long while. Now, going on to the Matchless, I went on my own, so I had to make more friends now in that 2.5 years. And now I was going to leave them again. It was, I suppose, the Navy was that sort of thing. You made friends and then you lost them, and probably wouldn't see them again. Sometimes you might meet up at a future ship somewhere if they were long service. But so I went into barracks on my own again as a leading seaman.
And that was February 45.
That was in February
Okay, how long were you in
45.
barracks for?
Not very long, not very long. I was in barracks, I think, until I got a draft ship to an LST. Now, I didn't even know what an LST was at that stage.
Now, when would that be? It looks like May on your
It
notes.
was April
April.
45.
So
So I
you're
was
in
only in
about to.
barracks a couple of months. I never stopped in barracks very long for some strange reason. I think I always volunteered to go to sea again. I hated barracks. I hated barracks. I didn't like it
Why
at
not?
all. I don't know. I didn't like the routine. I didn't like the. I don't know. I just wanted to be at sea, I think. I don't know. I wanted to go to sea. I'd volunteer for anything to go to sea. I was always down at the drafting office saying, "You've got any ships?" Worrying them to death. "Right, we'll get you one. Off you go." Anyway, I joined the LST 380. Now, as I said, I didn't know what an LST stood for, and it was stood for Landing Ship Tank. So it was a peculiar looking thing. I don't know how you can describe an LST. It was just everything was astern with a little bridge, and a great big open flat deck on the upper deck, two big bow doors which swung open, and a ramp came down, and then a great gap in the middle of where they put all the tanks and lorries and things, and on the sides and gangways along the side, closed in, were the messes for the troops that you had to man these articles that we brought aboard. But that was an LST. She had no guns on at that time. She was there. I think she was a Canadian. She was an old LST, and I think she was either an American at that stage. Well, I don't think we had any LSTs of our own.
Now, what were you going aboard as?
A leading seaman.
No, I mean, what was your special job? You know, all week.
Nothing when I went aboard there. You don't need to get anything. I went aboard as a leading seaman. I was went aboard as a leading seaman. My job there was the first job I got when I got aboard her was on the wheel, I think. It was a quartermaster was the first job out there. It's not a very big ship. There was only the crew consisted of I don't know, not very many. I can't think. About 30 or 40, I think. That's about all was aboard her, and a two or three officers, captain, a first lieutenant, and perhaps another one.
So what were your duties as quartermaster then?
Well, mainly looking after the ship's routine.
In what way? Tell us about it.
Well, just getting, calling the hands in the morning, getting them up, getting to work, falling in at after breakfast and detailing whatever jobs they were to be doing, in company with the petty officers.
You'd be on the wheel?
Beyond, we left Southampton. Yes, I'd go. I'd do my tricks on the wheel.
What was she like to steer?
A bit capricious, I suppose, because she's flat-bottomed, and quite a little bit. In she'd probably roll and home around on a glass sea, because, as I said, you were flat-bottomed and everything was sort of open. And
Now, where were you going?
we were going to go from Southampton. We were due to go to Hartlepool. We were going to go into dock in Hartlepool to have guns fitted on forward, because she had no armament at that time. So we were going into Hartlepool, but unfortunately, when we left Southampton, Hartlepool was bombed, and we couldn't. We got diverted to Manchester. I thought at that time, when they said we were going to Manchester, how the devil do you get to Manchester? I found when I got there, it was 8 hours up the canal. We arrived in Manchester, I don't know, sometime in 1940. Well, it was 1945 when I joined, so
April,
it
May.
was April or May. We didn't. We weren't almost left Southampton as soon as I got a boarder, so there was only no time. We went into dry dock in Manchester, and we were having these guns fitted.
Were you there when V-Day came?
I'll come to that. We were in Manchester about 5 months, I think. I met my future wife in Man while I was in
Tell
Manchester.
us about that then, just brief, you know.
Well, I was a postman at that time. I was a leading seaman, and I was the postman. So I used to have to go ashore with the mail and collect the mail, and that was in Trafford Park, in Manchester. And Trafford Park was the big, I suppose it was about the largest industrial estate in Europe at
Well,
that
were you
time.
ashore then? You weren't on the boat.
Oh no, I was living on board. We were on board. We were in dry dock, but
But
we
you
were still
went to
aboard.
Trafford
I
Park.
used to, well, it was in Trafford Park. We were in dock actually. It was Manchester Docks, but it was in Trafford Park.
Sorry, yeah.
It was all part and parcel of the same scene, really. But we used to have to go across the railway lines on to get into the post office. And there was a little a club. A working men's club, not far away from the ship, which we always went to, and that's where I met my future wife in there, early on in the time I was in Manchester. I left Manchester for a little while to go on a course in, I can't remember what the course was now. I went down to Portsmouth for about a month, I think, for some
Is
reason.
that where you were with V-Day, was it?
No, I came back after the course. I came back. I think it was to learn a little bit more about pom-poms, because they're not pom-poms, all Bofors, because they were fitted two Bofors on the bow. We had two Bofors right up forward above the doors. We.